This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for an adventurous chamber music experience, a multimedia exhibit exploring women's voices and societal norms, or a comedic romp with the Bard, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Chamber music and arias from dramatic operas merge in a unique, intimate musical experience as the award-winning Lyrica Baroque Chamber Ensemble presents Opera Fusion. Celebrating 10 years of musical expression in the Crescent City, the seasoned Chamber Ensemble is known for its bold adventures into a variety of musical styles. Daniel Lelchuk, assistant principal cellist of the Louisiana Philharmonic Orchestra, also serves as cellist of Lyrica Baroque, and he joins us in studio. Daniel, welcome back.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
How do you feel about the success and growth of the Chamber Ensemble as you reach a decade of performances in the city?
It's very exhilarating, I have to say. I haven't been on board the whole time. I've been on board for 5 years now. But what has happened to this organization, I think, is totally unexpected, because in the past 10 years, the organization has grown from a trio of harpsichord, oboe, and violin playing free concerts in the French Quarter to a very large organization that not only presents subscription concerts every year on its own, but runs NOLA Chamber Fest. We do an amazing amount of outreach. We have a program that we run with local schools called Power of Language, and we go into schools where the students really have a hard time at home and in their lives, and we try to awaken in them passion and emotion that they may not have tapped into before. So Lyrica Baroque is not just a performing organization. The mission has grown, and we're supported by a truly unbelievable board, I have to say, and it's really an exhilarating time to be doing what we're doing here.
Now, your latest concert is called Opera Fusion. What will we experience?
This concert is combining voice and instruments in a new way, and we're thrilled to be joined not only by the core musicians of Lyrica Baroque, which is Jaron Atherholt on oboe, Sarah Jane McMahon, soprano, myself on cello, and Ben Atherholt on bassoon, but we have also with us Bradley Moore on piano, who is one of the chief coaches at the Metropolitan Opera. We have Eric Silberger on violin, really one of the great violin players in the world today, and the great tenor Paul Groves, a Louisiana native, a great exponent of culture from Louisiana, who sings all over the world in all the biggest opera houses and with symphony orchestras, singing with us.
Now, the big work on the program is Ravel's Piano Trio.
We picked this piece, actually, it was a suggestion of Brad Moore, and the reason is because the third movement is a Passacaglia form, and Passacaglia is a very old Baroque form. So when you first said, let's do the Ravel Trio, I said, why does that have anything to do with the rest of this program, which is basically arias by Handel and Gluck? And he said, well, look at the third movement. So I looked closely, and in fact, the form is a very old Baroque form called Passacaglia. It was a wonderful idea, I thought, to bring Ravel, this great, towering, early 20th century composer, into this concert, because we do a lot of combination of styles. And I thought it was a great link that Brad found there with the Baroque form to suddenly insert a piece that you wouldn't necessarily expect.
What was Ravel's inspiration for the work?
Well, Ravel was a great writer for piano, first of all. Most of his famous works were originally written for piano. So he wrote Piano Concerti, he wrote other chamber music with piano, a huge amount of solo piano works, and he knew some very fine string players. So often in the history of music, you see a piece being inspired by a personal relationship the composer has. Famous examples would be Joachim, the great violinist, inspiring Brahms for his violin concerto. And when there's a great player who's close with a composer, they're showing new possibilities about what the instrument can do. So there were some wonderful string players around Paris in the early part of the century, and Ravel got to know them and wrote this wonderful trio, which was also made extremely popular by a very famous recording with Heifetz, Rubinstein, and Piatigorsky.
The operatic works on the program, these are custom arrangements by one of your team members?
That's right. Oftentimes it's a tune you'll recognize, but the presentation is a new one. So Ben Atherholt, the bassoon player of this ensemble, also has composition degrees from Oberlin, and we make sure they're put to very good use as he arranges these pieces for the specific instruments of Lyrica Baroque. So the original flavor from the composer, of course, is there, but there are new colors that you hadn't heard before. And we find, quite interestingly, that the grandeur remains of the original statement, but there's an intimacy that's also brought to it by the fact that we're five people playing instead of an orchestra of 100.
Now, you are originally from New Hampshire. How did you come to make New Orleans your musical home?
Well, I had some friends in this orchestra, and I was out of school, went to school at the Great Music School, Indiana University in Bloomington, and they said, there's a cello opening for assistant principal cello, and knowing some people here, and knowing it was, of course, a wonderful city, I had never been here before, but I was enticed by it, came down, and I took the audition, and I said, okay, well, let's make a go of it, and I've been very happy here. It's a wonderfully rich city, as we all know. And, of course, the history of classical music here is very varied and very deep.
And what do you see for the future of Lyrica Baroque as you embark on your next decade?
Well, I think the expansion will continue. The NOLA Chamberfest is growing, so I think the NOLA Chamberfest is on its way to becoming a nationally important competition as opposed to a regionally singular competition. The power of language will continue. We will be in more schools, reaching more students. In addition, we have many inquiries for concerts outside New Orleans. We'll be presenting this exact program at the Chautauqua Institution in New York in August, and Lyrica Baroque will also be performing in that sense as a touring ensemble. So the future is very bright, I have to say, and it's very exciting to be part of this organization.
Cellist Daniel Lelchuk, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you.
Lyrica Baroque presents Opera Fusion, Friday, June 14th at St. Mary's Church in the old Ursuline Convent in the French Quarter, 1100 Charter Street. More info is online at lyricabaroque.com. Question: does society silence women's voices by design when it comes to certain issues? That's the subject of Be Pretty and Shut Up, a new body of work by visual artist Carmen Mariscal, on view at the Mexican Cultural Institute of New Orleans. The exhibit explores the difficulties of women not being able to share their voice because of societal norms. Curator Marcela Correa joins us. Welcome.
Thank you.
Gender inequality speaks volumes in this exhibit, where a popular cosmetic, lipstick, is a major focus. What was the inspiration for the visual artist, Carmen Mariscal, and how does lipstick become a medium in her work?
This was a new body of work that she had been thinking about for, I think, about 4 years now, and hadn't had the opportunity to really showcase it anywhere. And she came up with this idea that women wear all different shades of lipstick, and in some ways they kind of become part of the portrait of a woman. The exhibition title is Calladita te ves más bonita, or in English, Be Pretty and Shut Up. So this idea that women's voices are muffled, you know, that you don't really have a say in a lot of things. So she wanted to highlight the mouth of a woman, and each lip is sort of like a fingerprint. So that's kind of where she decided, okay, well, each shade is unique to that woman, and each lip mark is also completely unique to that woman because it is like a fingerprint. So that's kind of where she started to marry the two. She got about 80 women from around the world, anywhere from France, Syria, Cameroon, Morocco, Italy, all over the world, and sat with them and talked to them about what issues they were not allowed to speak about, what sayings or things that were imposed upon them when they were little girls. She asked them to pick their favorite shade of lipstick and then make a mark on a piece of paper. And the paper is kind of like your average U.S. letter size paper. They're able to put it anywhere, and they all kind of put it towards the bottom of the paper. In many ways, this piece of paper with the lip mark then becomes a portrait of that woman, even though there's no outline of a face. It's just her lip mark. And then Carmen went in and sewed a lot of the lips shut. And then by sewing them shut, it was sort of to remind people that we try and put our voices out there, but a lot of times we are silenced.
Why this exhibit, and why now?
Today, I think what she's talking about is extremely relevant because of recent legislations that have just passed regarding abortion and the kind of lack of interest by society, mainly men in society, not wanting to really give women a voice over their own body. So I think that this exhibition brings a sort of dialogue, which is already happening. I'm not saying it's not happening, but it gives people a space to talk about it and hopefully gives people a way to kind of maybe bring society into that conversation when they don't want to be a part of it because they want to pass whatever law they want to.
Now, she's telling this story in a variety of mediums.
Yes.
What else will we see?
We have about 12 metal plates that are mounted on wood backing, and they sort of display like a book. They open up like a book. In the back of the metal plate where the lip mark is engraved, there's also an engraving with the saying that the woman who put the lip mark, let's say, couldn't say. So, for example, it could say, women are not allowed to talk about abortion on the back of the plate. And when the piece opens up, it's reflected onto this mirror. So the viewer sort of sees themselves reflected as well, and it becomes this sort of self-reflective piece.
Wow.
Yeah. In addition to those works, there's a series of photographs where Carmen is pictured with barbed wire. The pieces in the barbed wire are called coif, which in French translates to headdress. Carmen uses these because headdresses typically were symbols of power. Also, the reason that she uses barbed wire is because barbed wire is typically used as a symbol for division. For her, it kind of represents the division between Mexico and the U.S., but it also represents the divisions between humanity, between the body, and the way that we really live lives. And then on top of all of that, the 80 women that the lip marks were taken and the expressions were given, each one of them recorded their voices saying what they could not say in society. And then Carmen used those sound clips to create an overall sound piece installation that's part of the exhibit where you sort of hear these women kind of talking over each other.
If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all.
And it becomes almost like this reminder of women's voices being drowned out. So the viewer kind of gets this overall experience when seeing the works and hearing the piece.
It's a multi-sensory
yes.
experience as you go through. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about the artist. Who is Carmen Mariscal?
So Carmen Mariscal is a Mexican-American artist. She was actually born in California, but is from Mexico and currently lives in Paris. She works in a series of different mediums, anywhere from photography, installation. She's worked with a lot of theater designers. Her work has been displayed all over the world.
So I'm hearing themes of fragility, confinement.
Yes.
Domination.
Yes, a lot of recurring themes in her work, and you'll see that across the board. These works, I think, in many ways, speak to a different part of women's infringements and not being able to speak in society. I think they all work together really well. I think they show the unity of women, something that we really need to push in society. I think we've done really well with, you know, the Women's March and kind of rallying together, but I feel like we need to continue to do that a little bit more. I feel like so often women put each other down, and we don't really need to do that.
What is the conversation you hope this exhibit will start among a new generation of young women and men?
So the idea with the exhibition is really to give women a safe space to speak their truth. And it's also kind of to encourage a more open dialogue with society, to feel safe to say something that they believe in, and hopefully bring young men, older men into the conversation to feel confident and comfortable enough to have a dialogue with the women in the show, but also with women in the city, in the state, in the U.S., wherever.
Curator Marcela Correa, thanks for talking with me.
Thank you.
Act like a girl.
One of my mother's recurrent phrases was, "Don't be disagreeable," which was her catchphrase to try to shut me up whenever I had a critical or too frank opinion about something.
I think it's hard for women to...
Carmen Mariscal's exhibit, Be Pretty and Shut Up, presented in collaboration with the New Orleans Hispanic Heritage Foundation, is on view at the Mexican Cultural Institute of New Orleans, 901 Convention Center Boulevard, Suite 118, through June 27th. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. The New Orleans Shakespeare Festival at Tulane opens its 26th season with the Bard's comedy Much Ado About Nothing, a favorite work that hasn't been on the festival stage in 25 years. Burton Tedesco is the director. He's here with actor Graham Burke. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Hi, thanks for having us.
This is a long overdue treat. Tell me, Burton, let's start with you. How are you approaching this work?
We want to give the audience what they're coming to see. We want them to have that story of Beatrice and Benedict and the merry war that comes along with it. But we're also trying to give it a new little spin and do some different things with it. There are some surprises in the show for the audience. It's an old favorite in a new way.
What's the storyline?
Well, we have our gentlemen coming home from a war. They come to this villa in Messina. The people of Messina have decided to throw them a little party to welcome them home. And the young soldier, Claudio, after years of being away at war, he re-meets the young daughter, Hero, and falls hopelessly and instantly in love with her. And so from there, it's about planning that wedding, but also the sidebar of all of the characters conspiring to try to get Beatrice and Benedict to admit that they love each other and become a couple. So we drive towards the wedding and then hopefully a second wedding after that.
So they're two couples.
Two couples.
Star-crossed lovers and the other sparring all the time.
The merry war, as it's, as it's called. Yeah, yeah.
So Graham, tell us about your character. You play Benedict?
Yes, I play Benedict. He's one of the lovers. He's also a soldier. He's just come back from war. He's had a previous relationship with Beatrice. And you sort of see him throughout the process of the show, constantly trying to fight against the idea that he's in love. And then through a series of tricks and different events, he sort of comes to the realization that he's actually madly in love with Beatrice. And then hopefully begins to try to woo her and marry her as a professed person who doesn't. You know, in the beginning, he says that he would never marry. And then throughout the course of the play, hopefully, there's a marriage.
Is there a little something that you could share with us?
Sure. I do much wonder that one man, seeing how much another man is a fool when he dedicates his behaviors to love, will, after he hath laughed at such shallow follies in others, become the argument of his own scorn by falling in love. And such a man is Claudio. I've known when there was no music with him but the drum and the fife, and now had he rather hear the tabor and the pipe. I've known when he would have walked 10 miles afoot to see a good armor, and now he lie 10 nights awake, carving the fashion of a new doublet. He was wont to speak plain and to the purpose, like an honest man and a soldier, and now, as he turned orthography, his words are a very fantastical banquet, just so many strange dishes. May I be so converted and see with these eyes? I cannot tell. I think not. I will not be sworn, but love may transform me to an oyster. But I'll take my oath on it. Till he have made an oyster of me, he shall never make me such a fool. One woman is fair, yet I'm well. Another's wise, yet I am well. Another virtuous, yet I am well. But till all graces be in one woman shall not come in my grace. Rich she shall be, that's certain. Wise, or I'll none. Virtuous, or I'll never cheapen her. Fair, or I'll never look on her. Mild, or come not near me. Noble, or not I for an angel. Of good discourse, an excellent musician, and her hair shall be of what color it please God. Huh, the Prince of Monsieur Love must hide me in the arbor.
What attracted you to that character? Benedict.
I think it's the language so much, you know, and the fun in the juxtaposition of being a character who's so intelligent and witty, but also still can completely misperceive what's going on. And I think the juxtaposition in that is really exciting.
Burton, why did you decide to set this work in the 1950s?
Well, it made sense in the sense of war. We needed a war that the gentlemen were coming home from, so we decided the Korean War. It gave us a little bit of innocence in the period, because Hero's virginity is called into question, that sort of thing. So the 50s seemed like the right time to support the story that we wanted to tell. And it's a sort of glamorous period. So we wanted the glamour of that time.
The saying, much ado about nothing, is something that we still use in modern day, but it really goes back a ways. What exactly does it mean?
Oh, well, we did a lot of research about the word nothing. And in Shakespeare's time, it was more of the idea of noting. And so noting meaning knowing. And so really it's about not knowing much. You know, I think it's not a story of nothing. It is a story of these people thinking that they know what's going on and they really don't.
What would you say is the ultimate message of this classic work?
That there is love always between these characters, but it gets hidden by hurt, by trying to disguise their feelings to avoid being hurt. And ultimately, they're able to get past that. And I hope that's what the audience takes away.
Director Burton Tedesco and actor Graham Burke, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks a bunch.
Wise men say only fools rush in, but I can't help falling in love with you.
The Shakespeare Festival at Tulane presents Much Ado About Nothing, with performances running June 14th through 30th in the Lupin Theater on Tulane's campus. More info is online at neworleansshakespeare.org.
If I can't help falling in love with you.
That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Additional support comes from Christwood Retirement Community, the Contemporary Arts Center, and the New Orleans Opera Association. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at wwno.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go inside the arts. I'm Diane Mack.